This week on the Electronic Intifada podcast, Palestinian prisoner Samer Issawi ends his intermittent 8-month-long hunger strike after Israel agrees to release him in December. Why a rights group says it marks a turning point in the fight against deportations. Also, Musa Abu Maria of the Palestine Solidarity Project talks about the recent arrests of children by Israeli forces in the West Bank village of Beit Omar.
The army, they were taking photos of them face, and after that they came in the night and they arrested them and they put them in the prison.
A map of destroyed villages aims to teach Israelis about the Nakba. Think before you take part in occupation and war, says jailed Israeli refusenik. The U.S. State Department says Israel practices institutional discrimination. And news from the global boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, including how British-Danish security firm G4S is feeling the heat of growing international boycotts over its role in providing security services to Israeli detention centers and prisons. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor for the Electronic Intifada in Berkeley. We begin in the West Bank. Jillian Kessler-Damour with Interpress Service reported on the story of Ibrahim Abiyat from the West Bank village of Abiyat near Bethlehem, who was exiled to Italy after the Israeli army's infamous siege of the Nativity Church in Bethlehem in 2002. At the time, Israel was carrying out a large-scale military operation in Palestinian cities across the West Bank. In the midst of the Israeli assault on Bethlehem in April 2002, a group of Palestinian fighters and civilians took refuge in the Nativity Church, believed to be the birthplace of Jesus Christ, in the city center. Some 200 Palestinians were trapped inside as Israel lay siege on the church for 39 days and fired live ammunition and other weapons at the building. After a U.S.-brokered deal was reached to end the attack, Israel exiled 26 Palestinians hiding inside the church to the Gaza Strip and another 13 to various European countries. After being flown to Cyprus, Ibrahim Abiyat was eventually deported to Italy, where he remains today. His wife spends 6 months of the year with him there and the other 6 months with her children in the West Bank. Kessler-Damour writes that, quote, between 1967 and 1992, Israel deported 1,522 Palestinians from the occupied West Bank and Gaza, according to Israeli human rights group B'Tselem. In 1992 alone, with the approval of the Israeli High Court, Israel deported 415 Palestinian members of Hamas and Islamic Jihad to South Lebanon. The report adds that during the Second Intifada, the Israeli High Court also ruled that Israel has a right to issue orders of assigned residence to transfer Palestinians to the Gaza Strip. In late 2011, a deal was brokered between Israel and Hamas to release 1,027 Palestinian prisoners in exchange for a captive Israeli soldier. Of the Palestinians released, almost 200 were exiled to the Gaza Strip, and 41 were deported abroad. In March, the former prisoner Ayman Sharawna, who was first released from Israeli jail as part of the 2011 prisoner exchange and was then rearrested in January 2012, was deported to Gaza after conducting an open-ended hunger strike for 261 days. However, Murad Jadallah, a legal researcher with Palestinian rights group Ad-Damir, says that the recent struggle of prisoner Samer Issawi could mark a, quote, turning point in fighting against the deportations. On Tuesday, Reuters reported that Samer Issawi, who has been intermittently on hunger strike for more than 8 months, would finally end his protest and be released to his Jerusalem home in December. Issawi refused several Israeli attempts to deport him over the course of his hunger strike. Murad Jadallah of Ad-Damir added, quote, these strong positions never happen suddenly. People should sacrifice themselves and should fight to reach a new stage in their fight. Those were excerpts of a longer report by Jillian Kessler-Damour for Interpress Service. For much more on this story, visit electronicintifada.net. We turn our attention now to the West Bank village of Beit Omar near Hebron. The Palestine Solidarity Project, based in the village, has reported that, quote, in the early morning of Wednesday, April 17th, soldiers from the Israeli occupation forces entered the village of Beit Omar. At 2:30 a.m., they surrounded the house of Mohammed Ahmed Abu Maria and his family. The soldiers searched Mohammed's house for 2 hours and destroyed many household items belonging to the family. After the search, the soldiers beat Mohammed before they arrested him. Mohammed is only 22 years old, but has already spent 3 years and 2 months in Israeli prisons. He was released from prison 2 months ago and had just recently applied to continue his university studies at Palestine Polytechnic University in Hebron. 2 days later, on April 19th, the Israeli army invaded Beit Omar again and shot rounds of tear gas and rubber bullets at crowds of youth. Meanwhile, Ma'an News Agency reported that Israeli soldiers detained 2 teenagers on April 18th, one 18 and one 19 years old, and a child, age 11, in the Al Arub refugee camp, which is close to Beit Omar. Joining us to talk about the current spate of arrests, detentions, and violence against Palestinian children and youth by Israeli forces is Musa Abu Maria. Musa is a co-founder of the Palestine Solidarity Project and joins us from Beit Omar. Musa, thank you so much for being with us today on the Electronic Intifada podcast.
Really, I'm very happy to tell the people about the situation in my town. It's called Beit Omar, of the children arrested by the Israeli army. Actually, in 2005 until today, the Israeli army, they were start to arrest many of young children from Beit Omar. And the reason, because many of them, they were participate useful action here in Beit Omar. And the army, they were taking photo of them face. And after that, they came in the night and they arrest them and they put them in the prison. So every year when we publish a big report about how many kids the army, they were arrest, we find sometimes between 100 or less or more 100 kids. And we are talking about age start from 14 until 18 years old. And we have also Israeli lawyers, and many times she went to the court to fight for to release the prisoner. And most of the time, she doesn't find in the court strong reason the Israeli they can keep the kids in the prison, and they charge them sometimes money to release them. And if the family, they don't have that money, they will be in the prison for maybe 6 months or more than 6 months or less. Here, because I was met many kids after they released from the prison and asked them about the condition in the prison, they told me the condition is very bad. They don't have medicine. They don't have doctors sometimes. If someone's sick, they give him only a common, but they don't take him to the clinic or to the hospital. Also, the food is very bad. The education is very bad. And they think about horrible life in the prison. And also, we went to the school to ask the teachers about how they feel about the student they are in the prison. And they told us they are upset because when the teachers, they hear from the other students, the army, they came this night and they arrested some students and they keep him in the prison. So we talk about the education, how the army, they attack our education here. And I remember since the first Intifada until today, the Israeli army, they were occupied our universities and the schools. And that's still until now. So when we talk about the kids, I talk about something part of my life since long time when I was in the prison, and I know how the life. Always our hope is the international government, we ask them to do something of our kids here, because we know the international law always they respect the kids. They cannot be in the prison under 18 years old. But here in Palestine, when we talk about the situation between the Palestinian and Israeli, I saw many times the Israeli kids, the settlers who are attacking the Palestinian schools, and the soldiers and the Israeli police, they will give support to Jewish settlers to attack the Palestinian kids. But when we talk about the Palestinian kids, if they make any mistake, no one care about them. Like the reaction is very hard. They can put them in the prison. They can attack the family sometimes. And no any like the international community, they don't do anything for that. So if we want to compare between the Palestinian kids and the Israelian kids, the Palestinians, they don't have any right to leave or to study. And the Israelian kids, they have full right to do whatever they want, if also if they want to attack the schools. And here, like Beit Umar, because we still control from the Israeli army, every week, soldier, they were attacked Beit Umar twice. And the way how they arrested the kids, it looked like they are in the war. Before they enter to the house, they explode in the door, and they shoot sound bomb. And many times they shoot tear gas and the other kind of bullet. This is the way how they attack the house before they arrested the kids. And after they arrested the kids, the violent, it become more from the Israeli soldiers. Many times we record the Israeli violent when they arrested the kids, and we took that to Israeli court to try to stop the violence of soldiers. But actually, we have no results, and no one, he tried to stop the Israeli army, and they still continue to arrest the kids and to put them in bad condition.
That's the voice of Musa Abu Maria speaking to us from Beit Omar in the southern occupied West Bank. Musa, can you talk a little bit more about some of the kids who have been arrested recently? Can you tell us a story about one child that you know in Beit Omar who has recently been arrested, and how his situation is emblematic of the kind of arrest that we're seeing all over Beit Omar?
Yes, I want to talk about kids. His name Hamza Ahmed Abu Hashim, and his age like 13 years old. I remember a month ago, the Israeli army, they came to his home at 2 in the morning, and they arrest him, and the way how they arrest him, it's really very violent way. And after they took him from his home, they move him to Gush Etzion settlement, because there's a prison there, and they leave him 2 days. And after that, the Israeli police, they force him, he can call his father. And when Hamza, he starts to call his father, he started to cry. Why? Because the police beat him, and they told him, we know your father, he's active. And they tried to show him how the prison is very bad, and he should to stop, like, not to support the nonviolent action. And after that, they told him, you should to call Musa Abu Maria. He should to bring money to pay for the police, and then they can release him. So after we paid like around $300, and they released him, and I went to the prison like to wait for him after he released, and he started to tell me the way after they arrest him from his home, and they take him to the settlement, and how the settler, they came and they start to dance and to sing in the front of him, and to tell him, you are a terrorist boy. And the soldier, they are good, and you should to be in the prison, you should not to be in the school. So when he told me about that way, that make me feel there is something like when they take him from his home, he is not in safe area. Like maybe they could put him in very dangerous like situation, or they can kill him. And we talk about age like 13 years old. And this kid, when they grow his life in the prison, you know, I believe after that, he, of course, he will be like a violent person, because the reason he can be sometimes violent, or he can have a psychology problem, because he grow his life like in the prison. He doesn't grow his life in the school, or in his family, or between his friends. And that's the way how Israeli occupation, they were forces our kids here when they were young, and those kids, they grow inside the prison. They have no freedom. They have no justice. They have no right to grow in the life the same other people in the world. And yeah, this is like not human. And I believe the people everywhere in the world, they should to do something, real action to stop the Israeli not to arrest like our kids here.
Moussa, finally, can you talk a little bit about the initiatives that the Palestine Solidarity Project is taking to protect children and youth in Beit Omar and also protect the land of farmers and villagers in the village?
Actually, since we start to work in my town, because Beit Omar is Area C and surrounded by six colonies, and we know the Palestinian Authority, they have no authority here to anything. So for us, we take some responsibility to give our farmers or our people a new hope and to try to develop any kind of work with them. So because we have land near the settlement here, and our farmers, they were attacked from the settlers a lot of times. And in the summer, in the harvest time, the supplement, they were throw the sewage water and they damage our fruit. So the way how we can give hope to the farmers is to work with him again and to try to develop the land again. And also to show him you are not alone, we are with you. So our organization, Palestine Solidarity Project, we were starting three projects very important here. The first, to support the land near the colony, to make our land more legally, because in Israeli law, any land is not used more than 3 years, it becomes state land, and the Israelians, they will take that land and they will build settlement. And our goal is to develop the land by planting trees or building greenhouse or to do any kind of farmers to make him stay in his land. And, you know, we can do whatever it's make the farmers happy here. And also because we are not allowed to export any fruit because the Israelis, they still stop our fruit to export outside Palestine. We still have a problem here until now. We don't know what we can do of our fruit in the harvest time. And many of the fruit is like we throw it in the rubbish because we have no place sometimes to sell the fruit. And in 2007, the International Red Cross, they were found a big market here in the entrance of Beit Omar. And the Israeli army, after that, they block that market and they use it like a camp for the Israeli army. And sometimes, if they arrest like people from Beit Omar, they can put them in that market for a few days. And after that, they transfer them to other prison. The second project, and we believe that's very important here, is to support the nonviolent action in Palestine and to, like people, they believe the nonviolent action is only the way we can have our freedom. And this is also our message to show the international community we are fighting because we're looking for our freedom. And the way what we struggle here is like we have right to struggle in this way. And is also to cooperate with international community to invite them to Palestine. We can show them our daily life, how it grow under the occupation, because the international media, they don't show the international community about our reality here. The other project we have here, we believe the youth, they have power. And they need some education, they need like workshop. So our responsibility is to develop our youth here. They can be in the future like a leader. And those people, they could change the situation here. And they can feel they have space to work with other popular people. And I believe our project now is a good message for international community. Because we are publishing many reports, we're making like a documentary film, and we put many pictures about how our daily life, every day under the occupation.
Okay, well, we're going to leave it right there, but we are going to continue to watch the situation in Beit Omar very carefully. That's the voice of Musa Abu Maria. He is the co-founder of the Palestine Solidarity Project in Beit Omar in the West Bank. And for much more information on the work that Musa and PSP does, visit PalestineSolidarityProject.org. Musa, thank you so much.
Thank you for you.
In another report by Gillian Kessler-Damore for Interpress Service, a new initiative has been organized by Zokrot, which means remembering in Hebrew, an Israeli group which seeks to inform the Jewish-Israeli public about the forced displacement of more than 750,000 Palestinians when Israel declared itself a state, what Palestinians call the Nakba, or catastrophe in Arabic. On Israel's so-called Independence Day last week, Zokrot published the first Hebrew-language map detailing the more than 500 Palestinian towns and villages that were destroyed in historic Palestine from the beginning of the Zionist movement until the 1967 war. The map also includes Jewish and Syrian villages that were destroyed dating as far back as the late 1800s. Kessler-Damore writes, quote, "Each former village and town is marked with a dot, red, blue, yellow, pink, purple, or green, to indicate its type and when and how its residents were displaced. The names of the Israeli communities that were built over the Palestinian ones are also marked." Explaining why Zokrot created the map in Hebrew, founder Eitan Bronstein said, quote, "It's about time. For us, it's very important not only to show the destruction, but to show it as the background of what's happening today. It's crucial to acknowledge that where we live today is close to that town or village or so on." Kessler-Damore writes that there has been a gradual shift in Israeli society towards discussing the Nakba more openly, according to Bronstein, thanks in part to the increased visibility of Palestinian refugees' demand to return home and Israeli government efforts to suppress the Nakba. In 2011, Israel passed the Nakba law that barred institutions receiving state funding from hosting events to commemorate the Nakba. An original, eventually scrapped version of the law would have made marking the Nakba a criminal offense punishable by up to 3 years in prison. Eitan Bronstein of Zokrot said that they are going to distribute the map, quote, "to university teachers, high school teachers, headmasters, libraries, journalists. I really hope that it will open more places for discussion." For much more on this story, visit electronicintifada.net.
This is Liz Jackson with the Palestine Solidarity Legal Support Project, and I listen to the Electronic Intifada podcast to stay connected to the student solidarity movement on campus. And you can listen online at electronicintifada.net.
This week, the Electronic Intifada's contributor Sausan Khalife interviewed Netan Blank, a 19-year-old Israeli from Haifa, who has spent more than 120 days in prison for refusing to serve in the Israeli military. Khalifa writes that Blank began thinking about resisting conscription during Operation Cast Lead, Israel's three-week offensive against Gaza in late 2008 and early 2009. Khalifa adds that, quote, "Israel's Defense Service Law, introduced in 1949, gave the Israeli military the authority to enroll any Israeli citizen who turns 18. After finishing a mandatory service of 1 year, Israelis remain in a reserve unit in the army. This requires Israelis to spend 1 month in the army each year until the age of 40. Conscientious objection to military service is considered a felony in Israel. It is usually punished by imprisonment for a few weeks, during which pressure is put on an objector to change his or her mind. Following that spell in jail, the objector is summoned again to a military recruitment committee. Continued refusal to serve can lead to further imprisonment. In total, Blank has been summoned to a recruitment committee 8 times. On each occasion, he has been sent to jail. He is scheduled for release in 3 weeks. In the interview with the Electronic Intifada, Netan Blank says, quote, "I stated several times in court my refusal to be part of the occupation. I am against what the Israeli army does. I have a moral problem with it and won't take part in these actions. All this injustice towards the Palestinians under the Israeli regime. There is no democracy. They don't choose their fate as they have no right to vote under a regime that forces its decisions on them. It is the Knesset that votes and decides for the Palestinians. It decides their fate without including them in the decision-making process. I will not take part in that either." Sausan Khalifa asked, What would you say to Israeli young men and women when they turn 18 and have to serve in the Israeli army? Natan Blank replied, quote, serving in the military will not only affect your life, but a lot of other people's lives. You should have a clean conscience. You should think carefully before you take part in occupation and war. I know it is compulsory to serve in the military, but it is possible to refuse like I have. Of course, there are consequences, but if your conscience is not clean, do not do it, no matter the price you will pay. To read the full interview with Israeli refusenik Natan Blank, visit electronicintifada.net. The Electronic Intifada's contributor Ben White reported this week that the U.S. State Department has officially admitted that Israel practices, quote, institutional discrimination against its Palestinian citizens. White reports, quote, the annual country report on Israel contains uncomfortable reading for pro-Israel advocacy groups, particularly given who is publishing it. With regards to problems faced by Palestinians with Israeli citizenship, the State Department notes the following. Resources devoted to Arabic education were inferior to those devoted to Hebrew education in the public education system. Approximately 93% of land was in the public domain, including approximately 12.5% owned by the NGO Jewish National Fund, or JNF, whose statutes prohibit sale or lease of land to non-Jews. Approximately 60,000 Bedouin lived in at least 46 unrecognized tent or shack villages that did not have water and electricity and lacked educational, health, and welfare services. The law bars family reunification when a citizen's spouse is a non-Jewish citizen of Iran, Iraq, Syria, or Lebanon. Citizens may apply for temporary visit permits for Palestinian male spouses 35 years or older, or Palestinian female spouses 25 years old or older, but may not receive residency based on their marriage and have no path to citizenship. In addition, the report also records human rights abuses perpetrated by the Israeli authorities against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and Gaza Strip. Ben White adds, quote, the State Department's observations on Israel's institutionalized racism and systematic violations of Palestinian rights are far from comprehensive or flawless, but it is a marked contrast to the kind of tokenism popular with Israel's propagandists. For more on this report, go to our rights and accountability blog at electronicintifada.net. And now we go to news from the global boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. Audrey Newhoff reported this week that British-Danish security firm G4S has reacted to a wave of protest by rehashing claims that it will eventually quit its Israeli contracts in the occupied West Bank. But in fact, G4S staff will, quote, continue to service security systems in commercial and government sites inside Israel, including jails housing Palestinian inmates, and will continue to protect businesses in the settlements. Newhoff reports that on Palestinian Prisoners' Day, which was marked on April 17th, human rights groups staged protests worldwide against G4S's role in securing Israeli prisons. G4S provides security services to Israeli detention and interrogation centers where Palestinian political prisoners, including teenagers, are held. Last weekend, the British daily newspaper The Financial Times reported on its website that G4S would quit, quote, key contracts in Israel amid protests against its involvement in settlements within occupied Palestinian territories. The newspaper mentioned ongoing protests against G4S in London and other countries, a call by non-governmental organizations in Egypt, Lebanon, Jordan, and Palestine on Arab nations and the European Union to stop dealing with G4S, and the Scottish Trade Union Congress's vote in favor of Palestinian calls for a boycott of the company. G4S told the Financial Times it would quit a number of contracts which involved the servicing of security equipment at the barrier checkpoints, prisoners, and police stations in the West Bank by 2015. To read the full report by Adri Newhoff on G4S and other current news from the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, check out our activism and BDS blog on electronicintifada.net. And that's it for our weekly Electronic Intifada podcast. For news, information, cultural features and reviews, pointed opinion and analysis, and action alerts by our team of correspondents and bloggers, visit us online at electronicintifada.net. This week, be sure to check out our newest features and op-eds, such as Ilan Pappé's comment, "When Israel's denial of Palestinian existence becomes genocidal," Plus, internal documents show Canadian tax agency protected Jewish National Fund from scrutiny. Apologists for Israel take top posts at the BBC. Obama's rush to judgment. Was the Boston bombing really a, quote, terrorist act? Must-see photos. Activists remix Visit Israel ads on Irish bus shelters. Medical racism. Israel hospital director complains that too many African babies are being born. And much more. At electronicintifada.net, you can also post comments and sign up for our daily email digest. Follow us on Twitter at Intifada. Radio stations are free to use this podcast, and a special thanks to Flashpoints and KPFA in Berkeley. On behalf of all of us at the Electronic Intifada, thank you for listening.